John's Gospel is full of beautiful and striking imagery. Among the more powerful of those images is the repeated example of the Good Shepherd. Listen to Jesus as he addresses those who are following him. "Very truly I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of the stranger." Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is the good news for today. Let us rejoice and be glad in it.
Friends, will you pray with me? Loving God, source of light and life, oil the hinges of our heart's doors that they might glide gently and easily open to welcome your coming. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. It is a fantastic piece of art. But look, as hard as you want, you are not going to find it at the Clark. It is a glorious piece of fabric, but you will not find it in Terry's workshop. It is known by two different names, and it can only be done by two different people. It is the Habsburg napkin fold, or known as the imperial napkin fold. It is the story of the impossible. It is a single piece of starched napkin, a simple piece of cloth that defies logic, ration, and even physics. It is, by the time it is done, beautiful, with soaring arches that lift up to the heavens. It is geometric, with angles and lines that seem to reach out and welcome you in. And it is life-giving, designed in such a way to provide bread holders for the person who is fortunate enough, the very few people who are fortunate enough, to have it placed before them. I have to admit, it's so impressive and mind-boggling that I thought I could never describe it. I thought you needed to see it for yourself. And so that's the strange thing that was in your bulletin this morning. Take it out and look at it. Renzo was sitting there before the children's time, holding it like this, just staring at it until he could figure it out. But I think if you look at it too long and too hard, it's going to start looking like an Escher painting, so don't. This napkin fold has outlasted the empire that it was designed to glorify, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. In that empire, it was such a symbol of pride that still, if you go to any art museum in Austria or Hungary, my bet is that you will find an image of this portrayed proudly. And the only place you can ever go to have it placed before you is a state dinner in Austria. And you will be seated there with this standing before you. And I promise you, it will boggle your minds. But do not ask your server for the evening how to do it, because that is a classified state secret of the nation of Austria. It is an official secret as voted by the government. And there only are two people in all of Austria who know how to do it. No, if you tried to pick them out, you couldn't. They are not chosen from among the aristocratic elite. They're actually specifically chosen to blend in. They have full-time jobs out there in the world, but there are two people in the whole world who know how to do this. They're employed by the government, and they are tasked with two things: doing this whenever it's called upon, and passing the secret on to someone else before they die. They are the gatekeepers of this impossible beauty. This napkin, this piece of cloth that somehow transcends logic, ration, and physics. Their sacred task is to protect this impossible thing of beauty and to preserve it as it is, to keep the general public, the riffraff, the commoners away, so that this impossible thing of beauty might remain pure, true, perfect, special, rare. Their lives are dedicated to preserving it, even if the way they do it means that only a very select few will ever be able to actually experience it. Those two people are gatekeepers, protectors. Sometimes I worry that in our faith, we look at the beautiful, impossible, life-giving beauties and truths of Jesus. The beautiful things that we come here to celebrate each week, the things that defy ration and logic, the ways that being together and being in the presence of God promotes healing and beauty and truth. And sometimes I think we look at all those amazing things like gatekeepers. Something to protect, as if God's love, God's grace, God's transforming power somehow needs our protection. In this great passage of John, this passage that precedes the one where Jesus will proclaim the truth to everyone who follows that he is the good shepherd, there is much emphasis on the gate and gatekeeping. But the way John writes about it would make the state of Austria quite nervous indeed. But it is a passage that calls us to become gatekeepers, even if in a radically different kind of way. The gate you see in this sheepfold that John describes, it is constantly swinging open and shut, letting in and sending out, welcoming in and sending forth. It starts shut, not to protect some great secret, but rather to keep the sheep from those who would break in and do them harm, shut to keep thieves and bandits and rogues away, not from something as magical as God's love, but rather from the object of God's love, those poor, vulnerable sheep, you and I. But notice, first and foremost, it is a gate, not a wall. It is something that even if it stands locked shut during the middle of the night, its whole purpose is not to remain shut, but rather to open. And John describes just how it does. It opens to let the shepherd in. The gatekeeper, John says, opens that gate to allow Jesus to come in, to let love in, to let the shepherd tend to the sheep, to let Jesus fundamentally change and transform the way the sheep there experience life, not just to protect their life as a sheepfold does, but to have it so the sheep might live, as John says, abundantly, fully, completely. And that is, I think, at the heart of what it means to be church. That is what we try to do here each and every Sunday. We gather here in this safe place. We call this a sanctuary. But we could just as easily call it a sheepfold. This place of protection that has stood the test of time. And then we swing open our hearts to let Jesus in. We sing those introits to remind us that when we gather here, it is not just about us, but rather that we are welcoming the entrance of the one that is beyond us. We reach out to share peace, not just that we might wish each other love and well-being, but that through our hands, the grace of Christ might flow into each other's hearts. When we gather around this table to share the meal of communion, we do it to remember Christ, to bring Christ and that story back into our hearts and to our lives. If we are to be gatekeepers, John makes it clear that the first and most important thing that we will ever do is to welcome in the power of Jesus to what we do. But we swing open the gates, the doors, the table, the life of this church, not just to hog Jesus to ourselves, not just that we might have the most amazing thing, better than the Habsburg napkin or a 1,600-piece Lego thing, all to ourselves. But instead, we open the gate wide to let everyone in. It's one of the reasons that Allison was standing outside this morning, to make sure that anyone who drove by, no matter what they think of church, knew that there was someone there waiting to welcome them in. I know for those of you who sit in the back center, the draft can come through those center doors. And I know that the deacons sometimes caring for you, because that's what deacons do. They keep those doors shut on mornings like this so the draft doesn't get you. But I'm annoying. And if you ask the deacons, you will find me constantly out there throwing those doors open. And it's not because I want to be able to see outside from the pulpit, as beautiful as that is. It is to make sure that the whole world out there knows that these doors stand open, ready to welcome them in, that we open the gates to Jesus and to saints and sinners too. Letty Russell, one of my favorite theologians, who inspires me every day, proclaims that we are called fundamentally as a church to be a church in the round. And what she means by that is that we are called to welcome everyone and anyone in, and then to gather in a circle, because you see, the circle is, any point on the circle is equidistant from the center. And what she says we are to do as a church is to put Jesus right there in the middle. And then we are to gather in one big circle around it, making room, like we do here for the Lord's Prayer, for anyone and everyone to have a space in that circle, equidistant from Christ, none of us more special than the other. Centered around Christ, until we find life not just in our breathing, but in abundance. But here's the thing, if you read the rest of John, we don't just open the doors or the gates to let anything into this room, even as important as Jesus or as important as our brothers and sisters. We don't just open the doors to make this a destination, but rather we open the doors to make this a launching pad too. The sheep, Jesus says, are meant to come in and to go out, to come in and see the beauty of the impossible possibility, come in and to feel all the love that God can muster, come in and gather together as a family, safe and protected, to find strength, find nourishment like bread served at this table or tucked away in the hidden corners of an impossibly beautifully folded napkin. But then we open the gates to go back out again. Sheep sent out into the dangers of the world to bring the beauty of this love with us wherever we go. Just like those two people in Austria who aren't immediately recognized by anyone but who have life missions of beauty, so too we are called indistinguishable to leave from this place and bring with us an impossible beauty that we have learned and found in this place. A week ago, a number of us went to Framingham to share some thoughts about what makes us vital as a church. In the conversations on the way that Nick and Carrie and I had about it, we found ourselves talking about our relatively new church logo. If you've ever seen it, it looks like one of our windows. In fact, it looks exactly like one of our windows. But in the place of those panes, in that sash that runs across the one in the middle and up, going up and down, they're made wider to make sure that we see the cross emerging out of those windows. It is the truth we practice here, to look at the world through the lens of our faith, to come into this place, not just to stay here and dwell in it, as lovely as it is, but instead to bring our faith, our love, our hope out into the world like vulnerable sheep. Jesus calls us in to send us out as instruments of peace, to turn us into sowers of hope, to make us into bringers of consolation. And all of that is part and parcel of what it means to be gatekeepers of God's beautiful love, never kept a secret for the privileged few, but extended forever and to the ends of the earth, that all the earth might not just have life, but have it abundantly. Amen.